Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I must remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and the views of our guests. And of course, this evening, our guest is going to be Ron Brown, and Ron, of course, supports Radio Liberty, and we certainly always love to have him on, especially, today, because, of course, some very exciting things are happening in the gold and silver field and the economy, happening to the dollar. And of course, those of you who listen to Radio Liberty on a regular basis know that we've been talking about the fact that we are in a real financial bind, that the value of the dollar is dropping, that the value of precious metals has been artificially manipulated by the people who really run the world, because they've wanted to keep the entire world on a paper money system, and every paper money system throughout all history going back to the time of ancient Greece has failed because people act irresponsibly, and unfortunately our leaders have acted very irresponsibly or irresponsibly. In fact, it was Congressman Ron Paul when he was questioning Alan Greenspan at the House Banking Commission meeting back in July of 2005. Congressman Ron Paul pointed out that from 1971 to 2005, the Fed had increased the amount of money in circulation 12 times and increased the federal debt 19-fold. In other words, a rampant runaway of increase in the money supply, a rampant increase in our federal debt. And of course, they were simply, he did not mention this, but they're lying about the unemployment figures, they're lying about the rate of inflation. Inflation is probably running at 11-12%. Employment is somewhere up in that area. We're in real trouble, and the dollar is dropping, and gold and silver today soared more than I've seen them in a long period of time. Ron Brown, thank you very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Where did the dollar end today? Do you have any idea?
I was looking at the cash market, and it closed. Let me pull it up here. Down 77.69.
All right, 77.69, which means, of course, that the people who are listening to our program, you're losing your value of your pension, you're losing the value of your insurance policy, you're losing your value of any asset that's tied to the dollar, whether it be your bonds, your stocks, your annuities, anything that you have that's tied into dollars, is simply losing value and losing at a frightening rate over this last month or so. Well, Don, where did gold and silver end up?
Gold was up actually $11 today. The December contract was trading at 751. That puts the spot somewhere around $744.
Okay, and the silver?
Silver even had a more exciting day. The silver was up 30 cents today at $13.95 on the December contract.
Well, I think that this all indicates something big is afoot. What do you think it is? Do you think it's a reflection of the falling of the dollar in relationship to other currencies? Do you think it's the rise in the price of oil? Do you think it anticipates the war with Iran? What's it all about?
Well, to me, I think the main factor in the rally this week is, last week Bernanke lowered the interest rates a full 0.5%. And I think that kind of surprised everyone. And I think it was perceived across the world as an act of desperation. But probably more importantly, it was a slap in the face of all the foreigners and the people that are holding dollars. Because it was a pretty a strong statement that we're going to defend our markets and our economy, and we're not going to defend the dollar. So if you're the Chinese or...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And I think Ron is absolutely right. We're certainly not going to defend the dollar. We're going to let the dollar be destroyed. Certainly raising the interest rate would strengthen the dollar. Lowering the interest rate weaken the dollar. And that's what they elected to do. And, of course, that really opens us up to rampant inflation. I mean, and they'd even gone a half a point, but going, pardon me, a quarter of a point, but they went a half a point, not only with the discount rate, but with the prime rate. And this really, of course, is a slap in the face for everybody throughout the world who's holding dollars. And we're saying, we don't care what happens to you. And a lot of these people have lost almost 30 or 40% of the value of the dollars they're holding over the last couple of years. And I don't think they're going to continue holding the dollars. I think you're going to hear a great rush to get out of the dollar in the very near future.
I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, as you and I have pointed out many times, we need $3 billion plus dollars from foreigners coming in every day just to keep paying the interest on our debt. And yet we keep devaluing the dollars they're holding. So it's kind of like they're saying, you know, not only do we not want to buy $3 billion of your new debt that you're going to issue tomorrow and the next day and the next day, what we really want to try to figure out a way to do is to dump the dollars we've been accumulating for the last 20 years. So as they withdraw from the dollar and refuse to finance our ever-increasing debt, then I think it's going to get harder and harder for us to cover that, and I think it's what it's doing right now is forcing the Fed to step in and monetize, in other words, just run the printing press to buy back the unwanted currencies, the unwanted dollars that are being dumped.
But, of course, this is totally irresponsible. I mean, the whole idea of a central banker, I think, was best expressed by William McChesney Martin, who said the purpose of a central banker, his function is when the party is just getting to be exciting, you've got to take away the fence pole. And meaning, of course, when the economy is doing well and everything is booming, you've got to slow it down, or certainly where you're going to destroy the value of a fiat currency. If you have a fiat currency, you have to act responsibly. And the trouble is, our leaders are not acting responsibly. Alan Greenspan didn't act responsibly. Ben Bernanke is even worse than Alan Greenspan. And it's almost as if they're going to simply write off the dollar and impoverish every American who has his assets tied to the American dollar. It's happened in other countries where they've gone from 10% inflation to, you know, a 10,000% inflation, as they have in Brazil and as they're doing right now in Zimbabwe. In the nation and where we installed that government and we're responsible. Hold right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're just simply talking about the fact that it would appear that our leaders intend to destroy the dollar. Instead of doing what was right to defend the dollar, last week Ben Bernanke didn't just simply lower the interest rate a quarter percent. He lowered both the prime and the discount rate a half percent, which of course means that everybody holding dollars throughout the world lost a great deal of money. A significant percentage of their holding, and I think it's going to be a rush on the part of countries throughout the world to get out of the dollar to try to get some value for what they have. And certainly we know that Iran has turned their back on the dollar, that certainly we know that Venezuela is turning away from the dollar. Russia wants to sell their oil, not in dollars, but in ruples, and we see that Saudi Arabians and some of the countries over there are refusing to go along with us. They seem to think that they want to protect their country and their currency more than they want to protect the American currency and the present situation where the dollar is the reserve currency of the world. There's about, $2.5 to $3 trillion out there. And if the other countries start dumping that and those dollars come back here, they're going to have a terrible, devastating effect on our economy, don't you think?
Absolutely. In fact, Dr. Stan, what I kind of believe has happened, if I had to try to paint a picture, you know, your countries like Japan and China and maybe the G8 nations who have hundreds of billions of dollars that they're holding, they are kind of trapped in the lifeboat with us in that they have to come into the defense of the dollar whenever it gets too weak, because if it collapses, it takes them down with it. You know, China has, what, $1.4 trillion of U.S. Instruments, and so they're kind of being forced against their will to step in at times and defend the dollar. But what I see starting to happen now is that the smaller investors on the periphery are using the support that comes in from China and these bigger countries to buy dollars to try to prop it up. And those guys are saying, well, I'll sell mine to you. And so I think the bigger countries are starting to realize that they're fighting a losing battle. No matter how much they're willing to buy in an attempt to hold up the dollar, there's foreigners out there willing to sell twice as much to them. So it's getting harder and harder for them to prop the dollar up, as we're starting to see in the figures.
And, of course, traditionally, when we had a gold-backed currency and gold was the foundation of the world monetary system, you didn't have this sort of a problem. When a country was doing very well, why, of course, it'd be they would be selling a lot of products, and of course, it'd be getting a lot of gold in, and then the value of their currency would go up. And as the value of the currency went up, the value of the products they sold would increase, and so then they wouldn't sell as much. And, of course, then as they begin to slow down, they begin to lose their gold, they begin to not have as many things sold, and their currency would get weaker, and as the currency got weaker, then they could sell the products again much more readily, because and, of course, gold was the thing that kept all the currencies of the world in balance. Today, there's nothing to keep them in balance. You can declare your currency is worth this high or lower, whatever. President Bush keeps talking about wanting a strong dollar. And yet, because the dollar keeps falling. And, of course, he can say all he wants to. It's to our advantage to have a strong dollar. And yet the dollar has collapsed under his administration. So they say one thing, they do exactly the opposite. And the average American has no grasp of the fact that he is losing the value of everything he spent his whole life working for. And I see it's only going to get worse and worse until one day the American people are going to wake up and find that they've been intentionally impoverished, and that whole concept of transferring America's wealth to other nations, the equitable distribution of wealth between nations that's called for in the Earth Charter, that has become a reality. So tell us what's happening to you. What sort of response were you getting yesterday and today from your customers across the country?
Well, I started getting a strong response maybe 2 weeks ago. And of course, gold is, in the last month has risen probably $100, hasn't it?
Well, it's gone up an awful lot, that's for sure.
And silver is doing the same thing. So just the last 2 days, people are kind of stepping back and hoping for a little correction. But one thing I am seeing is that people are starting to realize they just need to get on board and not be too picky about where you get in.
Right.
Because I think everyone's starting to see that whatever it does over the next day or the next week is just a short-term fluctuation, and that the picture for the longer term is very, very bullish, and more people starting to see that.
Well, I think that really is. It's exciting. It's discouraging. When you realize how many people are going to be hurt by what's going on, and that the average individual out there has no idea. You know, that he may very well have a certain amount coming to his pension, but you're going to find that it just won't buy much of anything. And as the prices, certainly, of wheat and food products are going up. I was amazed to hear the wheat was almost over $9 a bushel. I mean, corn and corn products and everything that's related to corn is skyrocketing. Certainly, you go to the grocery store and you look at the skyrocketing price of food. And I'll tell you, it's not coming down. It's going to keep going right on up, and as the value of the dollar falls further and further, and the things we are getting from other countries are soon going to begin getting more and more expensive. So what do you think people ought to be doing, Ron?
Well, the first thing they need to do is start waking up. You know, I think the real danger here, Dr. Stan, is, you know, since you and I have been going on there, and since this bull market started, five, six years ago, you would have these rallies to the upside, and then you'd see a correction that would last a long time. And people kind of get the feeling that you're going to just have these little ups and downs, and it's really not going anywhere, and it's going to correct here pretty quick. But at some point, we're going to reach the melting point. And when that happens, you're going to see these prices explode overnight, and they'll never look back. And then the people who put it off are going to feel like they've missed out on it, so they'll hesitate again. You know, I remember back in 1979 when we had the blow-off in the gold and the silver. I got into the business. In fact, I started into the business in January of 1979. And I was totally convinced at that time that silver was going to make an explosion to the upside. And in January of 79, it was like $5 to $5.50 an ounce. And I was like a zealot. I was like a voice in the wilderness. Anyone that would listen to me, I'd say, buy silver. You know, sell your house. Buy silver. Whatever it takes, buy silver. And when it hit $8 in April, the people I was trying to get to buy it at $5.50 were saying, Ron, I wish we'd have listened to you, but it's too late now. And then by July or so, it hit $11. And those same people were saying, oh, my gosh, we should have bought, but I sure can't buy it now. To make a long story short, when silver hit 35 on its way to 50 in November, December of 79, those very same people who wouldn't buy it at 5 and wouldn't buy it at 8 and wouldn't buy it at 11 and wouldn't buy it at 15 were knocking my door down. I remember I had 4 telephone lines lit up 8 hours a day. And people would walk in. I remember I had one man walk in with $122,000 in $20 bills and 2 big grocery sacks. And, you know, I would look everyone in the eye at that point because I knew we were in a blow-off. And I'd say, look, if you're buying gold and silver here to make money, you're a fool. But to give you an idea how bad it was, how many of those people do you think I ever talked out of buying?
Well, at least your conscience is clear. That's the thing. And of course, people don't understand the madness of crowds. And there was a group psychology. And it's amazing, of course, that things always go higher than you anticipate they will. And they usually fall further than you think that they will. But there is a mass psychology that's involved with every bubble, whether it be the stock market bubble in the late 1990s, whether it be the housing bubble, you know, that we've just seen collapse. And we've seen people actually buying 2 or 3 homes with the idea that they were going to turn those over and make money on every one of them. And for a while that worked. And people were making fantastic sums of money, and they were buying condominiums before they were even completed, and selling them before they were completed, and making $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 on them, and then buying more condominiums with the idea of turning them around. But unfortunately, when you finally get to the end of the cycle, why there are an awful lot of people there. It's sort of like like playing musical chairs, and you want to get a chair at the end, but there aren't any chairs, and an awful lot of people are standing there when the music stops, and there's no way out. And unfortunately, this thing has happened with the tulip bubble over in Holland. They talk about and selling land in Florida, and the story of the Match King. I've forgotten where he was, one of the Scandinavian countries. And over and over and over again, people will get into this psychology. Well, this is what happened in 1929. My goodness, everybody was making money. The stock market was going to go up. It was never going to stop. And it happened in Japan in the 1990, where, you know, I remember my neighbor who was a stockbroker telling me that the Japanese stock market had hit 40,000, but it was going to go to 100,000. And everybody in the Japanese stock market was going to get rich. And at that time, you know, the land, certainly under the royal palace in Tokyo, would have purchased all the land in either Australia or New Zealand. And the land in the city of Tokyo was valued such that they could have bought all the land in the United States if they just sold it at those high prices. Of course, when the price collapsed, you couldn't get very much for them at all. The prices fell 90%. But that's what happens in a bubble. And I think that, of course, we're just beginning in that direction. What do you think, Rod?
Absolutely. In fact, I would go one step further this time, Dr. Stan. You know, if you look back at the boom bust in our country in the last 50-100 years, once you got through the bust and the dust settled, the monetary system and the central bank was still intact. In other words, the system was still the same, other than 1929, of course, or 33, when they changed the dollar. So if you had missed out on the gold and silver rally back in the 70s, when it ended, they all came back down and you had another chance.
Hold on, Tom. We'll be right back. Well, our guest is Ron Brown, and Ron was saying, of course, when all these past bubbles, there certainly has been, that we had a stable monetary system. That is no longer the case.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
If you can, why, we got a great lineup of speakers. The programs can begin early in the morning and go late in the evening, but one reason to come is we'll have all the things there that we carry, and you certainly want to see them, and there are a lot of things you're going to need for simply survival in difficult times, and of course advising how to prepare your house for a shelter in case there's some sort of a national calamity or attack or even breakdown in the structure of society. And so many things that we'll have there, which really will benefit you, and you'll have a chance to meet with people from all over the country. But I was just talking about how they will use the headlines in the paper, and they will say, Canadian dollar rising. And no, the truth of the matter is, the American dollar is falling. The American dollar is falling. It's not the Canadian dollar is rising. The American dollar is falling. We read the headlines, the euro is rising, it's just soaring. No, the euro isn't soaring. The American dollar is collapsing. But they don't want to use that term because they don't want to alarm the American people. They don't want them to realize, of course, that they are systematically being robbed of everything they work for. If they've got government bonds because they thought those bonds were stable, and of course they're getting a 3 or 4, maybe even 5% interest on that. But of course, with an inflation rate of 10%, you're losing 5% a year. Plus, are they going to charge you income tax on the 5% you're getting paid? So understand, Chris, you must understand the foundations of money, which most people don't. They honestly think the dollar is as sound as gold, but it isn't. The dollar is as sound as a piece of paper with something printed on it, and of course there is no basis at all for anybody to honestly believe that our fiat money system will survive any better than any other fiat money system has survived. And we've written a treatise called The History of Money. It's just 5 of our newsletters. And the same things were tried in ancient Greece. They were tried in ancient Rome. They've been tried many times down throughout history. We saw them used by the French in the early 1700s and by the Americans at the time of the Revolutionary War, where we had a continental paper that soon wasn't worth a continental. And we saw the same process used in France in 1789, and of course it was used, in Germany after the First World War in the Weimar Republic, and you'd have to have a wheelbarrow to take your money to the store to buy a loaf of bread. And believe me, it's happened many times since then, in Russia and in other countries, and we're headed right in that direction because there is an organized effort to destroy the value of our currency and the other currencies throughout the world. And because after all, if you're going to have a global, a one world government, a global society, you have to have a global currency. And that's why they're going to impoverish our people. And our people will look to the government to help them after the government, of course, has stolen everything they have. Well, I think you're absolutely right, Ron. Incidentally, our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. If you'd like to talk to Ron, if you have a question or comment about what's happening. But, I mean, when you're beginning to see the dollar drop as precipitously as it has over this last, what is it now, last 10 days or so, it's really been falling so dramatically?
Something like that. It seemed like it was Thursday or Wednesday a week ago that he made that announcement, but it dropped actually below 80 before that, didn't it? So it's probably been closer to 2 weeks.
So the American people, of course, nobody's pointing out to them what's happening, and you're not going to get this from Russ Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or from Brian Williams or the other people who work for the establishment. 5 mega corporations control the media and determine in large part what the American people think. And, of course, certainly we do have the Internet. We do have access to information. We do know that they're lying to us about unemployment. They're lying to us about inflation. They're lying to us, of course, about, the fact that the Canadian dollar is going up. No, the American dollar is going down. They're lying when they say the euro is soaring. No, the American dollar is going down. And let's go to Mike Schuller, who's calling in. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I just had a comment from when you were talking a few minutes ago about people who trust in the American dollar.
Hold that. We'll talk to you in just a moment here. Remember, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Mike. You have a question?
No, just a comment, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
Yeah, the American dollar, the United States dollar, what you were saying about people who trust in it, well, take a look at one. Reach in your pocket, pull one out, and it doesn't say U.S. dollar. It says Federal Reserve note. It used to say Treasury, U.S. Treasury, whatever. It doesn't say that anymore. It's a Federal Reserve note, and you can go on the Internet and go to the New York Federal Reserve website. I think it's NYFED or New York. New York Fed will take care of it. And look on there, look around on there, and you'll see, you'll find their front door, the front of their building on 33 Liberty Street. 33 is a magic number for Freemasons, and it's just around the corner down the block from the World Trade Center in New York, Manhattan. And take a look at their entry there, and you'll see the gargoyles. And you got to know, for occultists, for people who are familiar with the occult, gargoyles mean that the building that those gargoyles are on are Masonically controlled. This is not good for America. And so just don't trust in your U.S. dollar.
Well, I think people have to really understand. Of course, there is a Masonic symbol on the back of the U.S. $1 bill, the triangle capped by the all-seeing eye, but it really isn't Masonic. The Masons use that, but of course it's the emblem of the ancient mystery religions, and their strong spiritual component to everything that's going on today, including this move towards this one-world monetary system, this one-world government, and the new world leader. So you're absolutely right,
yeah.
Mike.
Well,
people do not talk about the spiritual forces which are moving us towards the government and are using the monetary system to bankrupt and impoverish our people.
Yeah, the symbol that you spoke of as the symbol of the ancient mystery religions, you're basically talking about Rosicrucianism, which is sort of a conglomeration of all the ancient mystery religions, as is Freemasonry. They're not the same, but they're closely paralleled to each other. And in a very significant bottom-line sense, if you're placing your trust in the so-called U.S. dollar, you're placing your trust in the gods of ancient Egypt. And so read Exodus and realize what God thinks of the gods of ancient Egypt.
Amen.
He trashed them. He sent plagues upon them so that all the Egyptians and all the Hebrew people in the land there would realize
who the God of creation was. Mike, we're going to have to go to... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mike, thanks very much for calling.
Yeah, pretty well said. Thanks a lot.
Okay, fine. Okay. Of course, our guest today is Ron Brown, and Cindy, if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and Mike was just on talking about the spiritual forces that are working within our monetary system. Most people never think of that. But then they never look at the back of the dollar bill and see the emblem of the pyramid cap by an all-seeing eye, which is the emblem of the ancient mystery religions transported, down through the centuries, through the Rosicrucians and the Templars, and then into modern-day Masonry, and then put on the back of our dollar bill. But it is really an emblem that is of the ancient mystery religions. What is it doing on the dollar bill? Well, there are powerful spiritual forces at work in everything that's going on, whether it's the war in the Middle East, or the war in the far in the Near East, or the certainly what's happening economically or politically within our society today. But of course, from a purely practical point of view, we have to talk about how this is going to impact on people, and when they begin to see how this is playing out, hopefully they begin looking and understand the part that these dark spiritual forces are playing in destroying the very fabric of what was once a strong Christian nation. Well, our guest, of course, is Ron Brown. And Ron, at this point, I would really like to have you get your telephone number. You're out there. I guess you don't have a website, do you?
No, I don't, Dr. Stan. Well, my telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And, Sydney, you've got some things that you've written up. You know, just talking about what's happening economically, and I've read them, and I was really quite impressed by them. Because you're pointing out, of course, that we are having on the verge of a real financial collapse here in the United States, since there is no evidence in all history where a nation has gone into a fiat money system, and that fiat money system has survived. Then in every case when it's collapsed, the people have been impoverished, and of course it wasn't necessary to happen here if they'd acted responsibly, if they'd taken the punch bowl out, you know, when the party got good, as William McChesney Martin, who was a fabled, he was very, very famous, chairman of the Federal Reserve Board back in 1950 and 1960. And of course when the party got going and the tremendous prosperity began to develop with this artificial phony money, he took away the punch bowl. In other words, they clamped down on interest rates, they clamped down on credit, and of course, if you have a gold system, you can't, you know, you don't have these busts and breaks, these great periods of prosperity and great periods of suffering. But of course, they took the gold away from us, and now, of course, they can make us suffer whenever they want to, and they can certainly steal everything the American people have worked their whole life for. Simply with a sweep of the pen as they inflate and destroy the value of our currency. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. But after all the time we've been talking about this, and I'm sure many of you have heard this over and over again, I think we're getting to that point now that Ron and I and certainly the other people, Bob Chapin, Melody, have all been concerned about. We knew it was coming, and we seem to be right on the verge of this explosion in the price of gold and silver, which reflects the collapse of the American dollar, and, of course, simply the impoverishment of our people. Certainly, you know, so what do you think is going to happen next? Do you think gold is going to go right through 850?
I think it's going to challenge it very quickly. You might have a pause, and you're always going to see some ambushes along the way, and then you'll have some sharp corrections, and that'll trigger the speculators in and out of the market, so you'll see these fluctuations getting more volatile as we go. But the long-term picture is that more and more people are starting to jump on the bandwagon, and that the bankers who've been able to manipulate this market over the last 15, 20, 25 years are slowly losing that ability, because, you know, even the greatest magician eventually runs out of rabbits. And I think what's happened is this whole system has reached a point where it's about to go over the edge. You know, when you were talking about the fiat system, I was just thinking, if we had a pure fiat system, it would be a heck of a lot better than what we have, because to me a fiat system is where the government just scribbles some values on a piece of paper and says this is a legal tender and you must accept it in payment of debts. And so that would leave the politicians the ability to just print money to get reelected, and that would be a horrible system. But what they've really given us is we've contracted out with the international bankers not to just print the money in circulation, but to lend it into circulation. So all of a sudden we now have a monetary system that is built on debt. And as you do that, as the debt gets bigger and bigger and bigger, it gets harder and harder to sustain, because you're spending all your resources just paying the interest on your past abuses. So it literally becomes a Ponzi scheme where you have to keep the system growing, and that's where we are now. They have to bail out everything that tries to fail, because if we ever go into any type of serious deflation, then you would have a 29-style banking panic on your hands, and it would be over very, very quickly. So as Richard Russell best says it, inflate or die.
And, of course, they can't stop. And, of course, for those of you who have any question about what's going on, if you have a computer, I would Google in David Walker. That's David Walker. And then the GAO. David Walker is the Controller General of the General Accounting Office, which is responsible, of course, for keeping track of the accounts in the United States. And he will tell you that they're lying to us about the national debt. We're told, oh my goodness, we're going to have to increase the debt limit up to about 9.8 $1 trillion. It's right now just almost $9 trillion. In fact, we would have run out of money in the next week or two, and certainly not be able to pay our bills. But they are going to allow us to borrow more money. It's all done by borrowed money. But who are we borrowing it from? Well, of course, what David Walker, the Solicitor General, the General Accounting Office, will tell you is that the real debt is not $9 trillion. It's about $48 trillion. You can Google it in, read it, and understand that there is no way, of course, they're going to be able to pay this off, and what they're going to have to do is just eliminate it by inflation. And in the process of eliminating, and you can eliminate debt by inflation, you just destroy the value of the dollar, and you pay it off with worthless dollars. But of course, when you pay off the debt with worthless dollars, you leave the average individual with worthless dollars. And that is exactly what they intend to do. And that is how they're going to fulfill the master plan laid out in the Earth Charter. Equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And of course, if any of you haven't got a copy of the Earth Charter, you can get it off the internet or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of the Earth Charter. We'll send you the material from David Walker, the Controller General of the General Accounting Office, who is employed by our government to keep track of what's going on. And so he's not a political appointment, so he'll tell you the truth. There is no way to pay off a $48 trillion debt. I mean, entire wealth of the entire population, if you take everything that everybody, all 300 million of us have, and put into a pot, it would be about $48 trillion. So they're going to have to take everything that everybody has, and that's what they're going to do. And tragically, most Americans have no concept of what lies ahead. Well, if you have any questions, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. But we are just on the very brink of this whole thing exploding, and the fact that gold has gone up so dramatically and silver has gone up so dramatically here, just really in the last week or so, a week to 10 days, I think really bodes very, very poorly for the survival of America as we know it. So, Ron, do you think are you seeing new customers, or most of the people coming in are your old customers?
A lot of both. In fact, I was working with a guy today that I've been trying to educate and wake up to this since well before year 2000. And he listens, but he never can quite get the concept and pull the trigger. And today he called me out of the clear blue sky, and he's wanting to cash out his whole IRA and get it into, you know, precious metals and so forth. So you're starting to see a lot of people that maybe we planted a seed with them 5, 10, in some cases 15 years ago, and all of a sudden it's starting to germinate, and they're starting to see what we've been talking about, and all of a sudden the fear is starting to develop. And once this thing reaches a certain level, at that point they can't do anything to stop it. The bad news, though, is that the very people at the top who are orchestrating events, once we lose the ability to manipulate the price and keep the game going, they'll just say, let's go to plan B. And see, what they've been planning all along is to destroy our currency so they could force a monetary reform. And as you know, in fact, do you carry the book, The Late Great USA by Jerome
Corsi?
Yes,
we do. Yeah, we have that. I think it's a great book.
I think everyone, that's must reading for every American, because even the people, Dr. Stan, that I've been working with on gold and silver for 10, 15, 20, some of them 25 years, they've seen this thing evolving over many, many years, and they're still saying this is going to be something our grandchildren have to face. So they think it's just slowly evolving into something. Too many of them are still thinking of gold as a way to make money and get rich instead of thinking of it as a refuge. And the reality is we're about to reach a point where they're going to snap the system we have. And to me, that book, The Late Great USA, tells me that we're in the end stage or in the end game of this dollar system that was created back in 1913. And when they collapse that system and they create the emergency and the monetary reform and they go forward with this North American Union, one of these days Americans will wake up not too far out and say, we've lost our country. We no longer have a constitutional republic and a government of law that defends and protects our rights. And at that point, there'll be mourning and gnashing of teeth because, you know, this system of government that the United States had was the best experiment that has given the most prosperity and freedom in the history of the world, and we're just letting it go without even putting up a fight.
Amen to that. Well, I sort of remember. I look upon America as sort of like Camelot and that little ditty in Old Levitt that we forgot that once there was a spot that was known as Camelot. But I wonder how many people really appreciate how fortunate we've been to have lived here. But if people aren't willing to fight to preserve our freedom, then it will surely be lost, along with the lives of most of our population. Well, we've got Mike calling from Idaho. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Dr. Stan. Hello, Mr. Brown.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for taking the call. You know, as you guys were talking there, I just couldn't help but remember what someone told me once, and it's only from a full belly can somebody disdain food. And it seems like we in America surely have disdained freedom. In my studies of economics, going on only about 3 years now, it seems like this same thing had befallen the nation of Israel in Nehemiah, where they had lost their money system. They were using usury as their currency. Outside of Nehemiah telling everybody to stop this heinous thing and turning things around with the decree of a king, I have not seen anywhere in history where it's turned around. Is there at any point on this downward progression that there actually can be a stopping point where we turn around, repent, quit disdaining the freedoms and graces that God has given us, and just stop the current debt cycle and monetary policy and turn around?
Well, would you have any thoughts on that, Ron?
Well, you know, it certainly isn't in history. There hasn't been many examples of it. In fact, I'm not sure there's any. It seems like there was one period in Rome. I forgot who was the new lady that came on and brought in a revival of sorts and brought it back for a few years, but then it turned right around and went back down into the...
Into
this decay, it's very tough to turn it around.
I think it was in about 300 A.D. when Diocletian was the emperor of Rome. And, of course, before that, for about 50 years, it, I think, had been 26 emperors, and most of them had been killed. They were all so corrupt, and had really pretty well destroyed the economy. And of course, he went on, and he tried to declare wage and price controls, and... But what he did was a very, very clever thing. He split the Roman Empire into two parts, part of it the eastern part and part of it the western part. Now, the eastern part went on to a gold-backed currency and lasted for 1,000 years from the 300s till, I think it wasn't destroyed until the 1200s or 1400s. The western part of Rome, of course, simply tried to keep doing exactly what they had before, and eventually they were destroyed, and of course Rome fell in 476. You can remember that because America was created in 1776, but Rome, the western segment of Rome, fell. But the eastern segment actually had and I think it was called a gold dinar. They went to a gold-backed currency, and of course they survived. I'm not saying that, you know, that we could do the same thing. Of course, a lot of this has to do with our spiritual approach as well, and there are examples. For instance, when Jonah went to Nineveh and told the people to repent, and they did repent, and God held his judgment off for about a generation, about 60
right.
years. But, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, Mike. Our job is to educate people, to make them understand that behind the economics are powerful spiritual forces, and then the rest of it's really up to God, not up to you and I.
Well, thank you very much. I just was trying to pick my brain to think of if there was any time in history where something turned around on a monetary policy that's as far gone. I know that in a fiat currency, the greatest time period that a fiat currency has ever lasted is 100 years.
Right. Well, of course, the eastern part of the Roman Empire, but they went to a gold-backed currency. That was the difference between the eastern half centered in Constantinople and the western half that was centered in Rome. Okay?
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Thanks very much. So let's go to Tom is calling. And hi, Tom, where are you calling from? Okay, go right ahead. Do you have a quick question?
Yeah, Ron, how much time do we have?
Oh, we've only got about 30 or 40 seconds right now. That we can...
I was asking Ron how much time we think we have left before the crash.
Well, how much time do you think we have left before the crash?
Well, I think we're seeing the beginnings of it right now. It's just going to keep accelerating as far as trying to predict when this thing will go into all-out panic. It's very difficult to...
Will it go down fast or a slow ride down?
At some point it will go down fast.
Well, we just have the one that's going to start, Tom.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you so very much, and we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've still got Dan calling from New York. Dan, did you have a quick question for us?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Hi to you and Ron. I was just wondering, the people that are behind all this, the Rockefellers and stuff like that, now how will they maintain their wealth when they bring us on the same playing field with all the third world nations, et cetera?
All right. What do you think, Ron? How are they going to survive all of this?
I've always puzzled with that whole question. You just wonder how anyone could think they're getting ahead by bankrupting and throwing the whole world into chaos. I think the only answer to that in my mind is it's a spiritual answer, and that is Satan came to destroy.
I mean, I really think that that's as good an answer as you're going to come up with, Dan. I'm sure that they've got their money invested in gold and silver throughout the world. I'm sure they have their refuges all throughout the world, but, I believe also that they are answerable to a different God. And when you understand that so many of the people involved in this movement really do worship a different God, then it all begins to make sense. Otherwise, it's just nothing but planned confusion.
Okay, so even though they destroy us, they're also, in a sense, destroying themselves in the long run.
Absolutely. Okay. But, of course, I don't think that they've realized that, but this is exactly what's going to happen. And, of course, they are going to have to spend eternity standing, of course, based upon what they've done. Fortunately, we may not ever be rich, we may not be successful, but as long as we're true to God, I think we'll spend eternity with Him. That's what it's really all about.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
God bless, and thanks very much. Well, that was Dan calling from New York. Ron, you've got about a minute to wrap up the program for us. Go right ahead.
Well, I was going to just say, to me, the thing that tells me that we're in the end stage of this cycle is simply all the publicity that's suddenly coming out with this North American Union and the Amero, and then when you look back to see who's the one that's putting out the information, it was the very group that's orchestrating events. So what that tells me is they're preparing us to accept their draconian solution. So the challenge we have as individuals is how do we best protect ourselves going into this, knowing we can't change it overnight. And it seems obvious to me that if you look back through history, every fiat system in the history of the world has totally failed, and the people that held that paper got wiped out. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that the U.S. the system is collapsing. So throughout history, gold and silver has been the one vehicle that would bridge the gap from this failing dollar system to the new system that they're planning, which, if they have their way, will probably be something called the Amero.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sydney, before I let Ron go, I want you to get out your telephone number again. Somebody called and asked how silver is sold, how do you buy it? Well, Sydney, if you're interested for more information, you can always talk to Ron. How do they get hold of you, Ron?
It's 1-800-595-0561. 1-800-595-0561.
God bless, and thanks so very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was, of course, Ron Brown, and this is the time when I do need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do depend upon those of you who listen to our programs and agree with us that we are truly involved in a spiritual battle being fought on an economic, political, ideological, cultural battlefield. But it is primarily a spiritual battle, and there really are spiritual forces at work. And when you look and see what's happening, and you see some of the distance makes sense. Why, think about the spiritual implications. Why do they want to plunge us into a war with Iran? Well, I believe, of course, there's spiritual forces that want to bring, our society, a Western civilization, into a clash with the Muslim situations, fulfilling Samuel Huntington's concept of a clash of civilizations. If you haven't read The Clash of Civilizations by Harvard professor Samuel Huntington, you need to do it and to understand where we are headed, because he tells you what's going to happen when the West tries to force the Muslim world to change its values. And now, Christian, I need to remind all of you about the conference we're going to be having on the 28th of October here in the Monterey Bay area. And if you can possibly make it, please do. It'll be a great time. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You'll have to have reservations because we're serving lunch, and it's going to be, well, it's going to be a great lineup, and Ron Brown certainly will be there. If you'd like more information on what we're talking about tonight and the implications of what's happening, let me suggest a little pamphlet. It's inexpensive. It's about five of my newsletters called The History of Money. The History of Money. And then the talk we gave on the financial tsunami, and it's available in either video or DVD. And there's a syllabus that goes with that that's very important, because you'll need that to be able to go over the text of what we said, and then to begin studying some of the things that come from the Federal Reserve Board and from the first bank of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City, and see how this all of this fits together, because we give you material from the Federal Reserve System. And then, of course, you'll want to read my July, August, and September newsletters, the July newsletters up on the Internet. The August newsletter just went out. It'll be posted in a few days. You want to read these things so that they will begin to give you insight into what's going on, and so you can begin to think in the terms that the people on the other side think in. The book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, that's The Creature from Jekyll Island. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. And Fiat Money, Inflation in France. Those three books will give you tremendous insight, along, of course, with my pamphlet on the history of money and my talk on the financial tsunami. So you need to begin learning, and you need to begin studying right now. The time is late, but the train has not left the station, or it may be leaving the station, but you can still get on board. You need to know what to do, and we I think, give you a pretty good description in the talk that we give, because you must start making your plans, else why you may very well be one of those people who ends up standing at the station and the train is disappearing in the distance. Our telephone number, 1-888-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com, where you can hear us on the Internet live 4 hours a day. You can hear our archive programs for 6 weeks, our MP3 programs. You can certainly watch many of our videos are posted there. And certainly you can read our newsletters going back to the late 1990s. Please tell others about our programs and pray for our country and for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Hill. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And certainly our guest this evening is Barry Shamish, and Barry is, of course, an investigative reporter who worked for many years in Israel, and certainly was deeply involved with the effort to try to let the Israeli people realize that the Prime Minister of Israel, Mr. Rabin, had been actually killed in a coup d'etat when, of course, it was the man, the patsy, who supposedly shot him behind, but he was shot from... certainly in front by one of the members of the Israeli intelligence or security detail who was supposedly guarding the Prime Minister of Israel. So basically, Barry has been on the front lines of a number of fascinating stories. He's a frequent guest here at Radio Liberty, and of course he's got a lot of great information that you'll certainly want to access. But right now, of course, we're going to be talking, I suspect, about what is going on in Israel today as Israel prepares for the very real possibility of a war with Syria and for a war that will involve Iran as well. Israel, of course, is under tremendous pressure from its leaders, whose loyalty is not to Israel but to the globalist agenda, and of course they've abandoned the Gaza area, Gush Katif. They want to, of course, force the Israelis out of Judea Samaria, which is right in the very heart of Israel. And of course, the ultimate goal is the destruction of Israel by their current leaders. So with that as a background, Barry Shamish, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Always a pleasure.
All right, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, to make life simpler, did you read my latest article?
I did, yes.
Well, that's a subject for a show.
All right, fine. Well, that's why we've got you here. You pick up the story.
Well, this was an article that states the obvious, really. I mean, I've been stating this long enough, but I found the proofs that the Council on Foreign Relations is not just screwing up Israel. It's also screwing up Iraq, Afghanistan, and it is eyeing Iran for whatever it's planning with Iran. We don't know really what they're planning. It hasn't happened yet, but they've got a few aircraft carriers sitting in the Persian Gulf waiting for something. What people don't understand, and what I brought out pretty clearly, is that the Jews of Judea Samaria, the Torah-believing Jews, and the Iraqis actually have the same enemy. And this is quite... well, look, when I read a story, and I'm criticizing the Council on Foreign Relations, that means that a lot of people from the left, who also suspect the CFR of being behind 9/11, as one example, are reading my articles, and they're finding out something they never suspected, that the Jews of Judea and Samaria, far from being the enemy, are actually the victims. And they're no less the victims, than the nation of Iraq, Afghanistan, or whoever was manipulated into this upcoming conflagration on the Arab side. Now, I think we should state, before I dive into what the article is about, I'm not forgiving the state of Islam. It's terribly savage and backwards and barbaric. And you don't want to see Israel overrun by the Arabs. It will be a Holocaust. So let's not state that I'm pro-Arab here. Far from it. But I'm stating a fact. The Council on Foreign Relations are chopping the Jews out of Israel, and that is the Torah-believing Jews. They're wrecking their society the same way they're wrecking Islamic society. We have something in common.
And we really do, and of course they're wrecking American society as well. And very, very few people understand that the Council on Foreign Relations is simply a front for a secret society known as the Round Table, which was a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891. Go right ahead.
Oh, I heard the music, but I'm free.
You go right ahead, right?
All right. Now, I began the article with, in a way, a local story. In Israel, it was a sort of big story among the right and the religious, and a little bit of a story in the secular press. There was a rally against Condoleezza Rice, finally. Finally, Condoleezza Rice arrives in Jerusalem for a little din-din with Ehud Olmert and a protest group, and not a big one either, but they're the last one that remains. It's called the Women in Green, organized a rally outside Ehud Olmert's house while Condoleezza Rice was inside having her din-din. And Ehud did not like that one little bit. And I guess Condoleezza was really upset that her culinary treat with Ehud was interrupted by these screaming women outside their windows. So Ehud Olmert sent his most vicious police, and I have pictures, and I think I may even tell your people how to get the pictures. And, well, they arrested her. You know,
they arrested the woman who headed this, the Women in Green.
Nadia Matar.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the rally was peaceful. It was over. It wasn't very well attended, about 100 people. She sat down and it was just shooting the breeze with some friends. And the cops said, "You're coming to the police station." And they pulled her away. Her friends intervened. And the police became extremely brutal. They started really hitting women. And write me at my email, people. I'll send you the pictures. My email is chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at netvision, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N, that's one long word, netvision.net, N-E-T.I-L, chamish at netvision.net.il. The pictures were taken by Gemma Blech, and she is the photographer of my book, Bye Bye Gaza. You know, she's good. We go back a long time, and she's given me the right to send out about 20 pictures of this arrest of Nadia Matar. And you've got the old time, I could use the word the pigs, you know. You've got these 300-pound moose policemen who are not representative of the police force. They're chosen for their brutality.
Hold that thought there. Right, we'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is simply telling us that there, Sydney Condoleezza Rice had gone over to Israel here a week or so ago, and of course there's almost no resistance to the sellout of Israel by the elitists who appointed by the globalists who can rule Israel today, and that would be, of course, Olmert and Barak and to a lesser extent Perez, although Perez certainly seems to have strong ties to the Vatican as well, but none of them are loyal to Israel. And so here you have Condoleezza Rice. She's visiting with Olmert for dinner, and the Women in Green are there, about 100 of them. They demonstrate outside Olmert's home, and the police come, and of course these are the sort of like the riot police. They're really vicious and nasty, and they start hitting the women, and they arrest the leader of Women in Green. You have to understand that they have neutralized all the other resistance to the oppressive regime there in Israel. And it's sort of like in America, where there's really very little effective resistance. In fact, most of the so-called anti-war movement is controlled by the same people who are financing and backing the war. And we see where there's a whole idea of controlling the resistance. So there is no effective resistance either here in America or over in Israel. But anyway, what happened after they arrested the leader of the Women in Green?
Well, two of them were arrested. They were thrown into the Russian compound. It's a jail in Jerusalem. It's filthy. It's medieval. They refused to hand their hands over for fingerprints. They refused to have DNA testing. They were threatened. They met a judge, and the judge told the police to leave them alone. They hadn't broken any laws. But they ordered Nadia to give I don't know what you do for DNA testing. You spit on a piece of paper, whatever it takes. The judge said you have to do that. They want your DNA. Now, why, I don't know. I've never heard of this test before. I don't recall the police needing anyone's DNA for any reason.
They're increasingly doing this, Barry. As here in the United States, if you are convicted of a crime, they will take your DNA. Before you're convicted, of course, they will ask you for your DNA, and then they'll say, well, if you don't want to give it, obviously, you must have something to hide. Well, I don't think any of us should be forced to give our DNA. But, of course, there are the people who said, but this facilitates police work, and I'm sure it does. But it also, of course, lays the foundation for a tyrannical state where they have information on every aspect of us, including our history, our life, our financial relationships, our family relationships, our education, our health, and even, of course, our genetic makeup. But go ahead.
Well, she wasn't convicted. Let's begin with that. She was sent home. There was no crime. Now, again, I can imagine in a sex criminal, let's say, having his DNA would be very handy. I can't imagine that the leader of the Women in Green has to give her DNA to the police for any reason imaginable. So really, what crime is she going to commit where they're going to find samples of her mucus at the crime scene?
But, Barry, it's all about intimidating people. This is really what it is. Is they want to intimidate the people in Israel. They want to intimidate the people in America.
Well, I think spending the night against her will in a tiny cell in a filthy jail in Jerusalem probably did a certain amount of intimidation. But I know Nadia, and she likes the limelight, and she made the best out of it. But I wrote the article, and I'll go into it shortly, how I got around to the fact that Nadia is now on a hit list. And this is no joke. When only 100 people show up, she's not threatening Olmert, but she embarrassed Olmert. They cannot take a risk that a CFR member shows up in Jerusalem and there are people screaming outside her window when she's having dinner. You know, that's the issue, of course, is not that Nadia had a great success that's going to save Israel. She ticked off the Council on Foreign Relations. And I don't even think she understood that crime. I don't even believe she understood why she was arrested. But that article of mine pretty well summarized it. If she didn't understand it 3 days ago, I think she has a better understanding today of why the police arrested her. She attacked the Council on Foreign Relations by attacking Condoleezza Rice.
Well, because most people don't even understand what the Council on Foreign Relations is. In fact, it wasn't until about a decade ago that they even would admit the organization existed. Before that, you mentioned it, you were ridiculed. And then one day, of course, people from the Council on Foreign Relations started to come forward. It was as if it was the most normal thing in the world. This organization has been around since 1921 in the United States. And it has always been secret, and it has always controlled our State Department. Whether you had Democrats or Republicans in power, it has always controlled the CIA. It has always controlled the Federal Reserve Board. It has always controlled the centers of power. So, but, you know, now, of course, they're coming forward. Well, of course, I mean, we've always been here. There's nothing to hide. Of course they're hiding it. They're never going to let the people understand that the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for a secret society. But go right ahead.
Well, your show helped a lot. I was a little lost about the third. Okay, now we're now switching from Israel to Iraq.
All right, fine.
And it's connected, by the way. The Council on Foreign Relations right now are absolutely mad. They're mad, I tell you. They're killing people. And we'll return to Israel and how this all fits. But we spoke about a week ago about an op-ed article, an op-ed in the New York Times in August, where 7 soldiers serving in Iraq, well, they pointed out that the war was unjust and that America's got to leave, we shouldn't have been there in the first place, and so forth. I reprinted that article, of course, but what we discussed was Joel Skousen's observation that two of the seven soldiers had died in a rather mysterious truck accident. And I went looking on the internet, and lo and behold, both their parents believe it's murder. And so what I did is I took the URL of this article from the Statesman, and I sent it to myself so I would write the article up. And then I double-clicked it so I could see the article where their parents of the two dead soldiers are hopping mad at the American administration, and it's gone. Within a day, it just disappeared and didn't exist anymore. And that was surprising enough. And I actually included that article. Maybe someone who understands the internet can find it cached somewhere and can bring it out again. But I found other articles where the families of the soldiers don't believe it was an accident. And no one here seems to understand that the families of these fallen soldiers who were in a truck accident, who were in the New York Times 3 weeks before, their families think it was murder.
Let me clarify that just a little bit. These seven soldiers had written an op-ed article that was published by the New York Times on the op-ed page, saying, of course, that they, although they were soldiers and they would carry out their assignment, they thought it was a mistake being in Iraq, and they were very critical of what was happening and that we were not winning the war. Well, then here within a few weeks, right, two of them die, and, you know, in this truck accident, another is shot in the head. I don't know whether he will survive or not, but I mean, what are the chances that three out of the seven soldiers who signed an article that was published in the New York Times within 3 weeks would be either dead or hospitalized? I mean, statistically, it's a pretty slim chance. It's sort of like Pat Tillman, critical of what was going on, being shot three times in the middle of the forehead at close distance. And the doctors who saw the body said, this is obviously murder. We want to open an investigation, and being ordered not to open an investigation. And then, of course, there's the go through the fall of having some sort of a congressional investigation, somebody gets slapped on the wrist. But nobody's ever questioned is, who shot Pat Tillman? Why were the people in his unit threatened for bringing out anything about Pat Tillman's death? They were told if they ever revealed what they saw that day, they'd been in serious trouble. And, of course, everybody in that unit has been quiet because they don't want to end up like Pat Tillman. Who killed Pat Tillman and who covered up the murder? Because that's what the medical officers thought it was. And then we see this other episode, and it makes you wonder who's really running things at the Defense Department.
Well, this show got me the third soldier. They got me the URLs. And by the way, thank you, Archie. If you're listening to this show, he said I heard you on Stan Monteith, and he sent me the URL that I was searching for about the third soldier shot in the head, and it looks like he'll recover, but I think he'll keep his mouth shut and not write any more op-eds, that's for sure. I think he got the message. It's sort of like Reagan being shot and Brady getting the brain damage, but the message was pretty clear to Reagan that you better follow orders and so forth. He'll probably take that sort of line that it's better shut up from here on in and just follow orders. But the point is, this show actually got me the URL, and I'm very grateful for that. And you're right about Pat Tillman. Now, I wrote something very, very precise, and I got the URL that described that he was shot from 10 yards away. The first shot killed him, and then he had two more shots when he was already on the ground, presumably dead, through the head. So Tillman was fragged by his own men. And I'm not talking about men in the field. I'm talking about someone who kills a soldier to shut him up.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Barry Shamish. And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about some very unfortunate situations. But there really are evil people out there. And if you speak out against them, they will kill you. And believe me, I've had a number of the people I've interviewed die under very, very mysterious circumstances, and I've also interviewed three professional assassins. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, what we're discussing, what I wrote about Tillman, incidentally, I always like to keep a little humor, even in the most dire of circumstances. And for one thing, I get a more loyal readership when they're amused by me. And I don't write scholarly work, but I write accurate journalism. I just said that the St. Louis Cardinals lost their lineman, Pat Tillman, on a permanent injury list. He's been placed on the permanent injury list after being flagged by his own officers. I think some people in the know that Pat Tillman was making a very good living in the NFL, and he was a hero for quitting this lucrative football job to volunteer to fight in Afghanistan. So if he started opening his mouth, he could genuinely threaten, he could really overturn the apple cart. So it was better to kill him than let him become an anti-war spokesman. And that's what they did. Now we go back to Israel. When I wrote about Nadia Matar, I told her I was right. I told her friends, I said, you have to guard this woman. You guard her against traffic accidents, against strange suicides, unusual incidents of terrorism, just anything that can look like an accident. I said outright, she is going to be on the list. They have gotten rid of all protests in Israel. And now we will go into... Oh, you know what? Do I hear music?
No, you don't hear music yet. I'll tell you. Don't you worry.
All right. Now, look, I have a book called Bye Bye Gaza, which tells you how they got rid of all the protest movements in Israel but the women in green. They're the last ones to survive. If you want the book, you go to the website lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. Write in my name. It says search. You write C-H-A-M-I-S-H, Chamish, and you'll get to Bye Bye Gaza as well as other books. But Bye Bye Gaza really does tell how they got rid of the opposition to the Oslo Peace Accord in Israel. And believe me, there was opposition at one time. Now, there were three and only three sources of protest in Israel. They gathered enough people to be called sources of protest. They were, one, the Yesha Council. That was the council that represented the communities of Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. They were destroyed very, very simply. The government stuck their people at the top of the Yesha Council. They just kept the Jews away from the Gaza Strip. They kept probably as many as 200,000, maybe more. There were protests in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem that saw possibly 250,000 actual protesters against the Gaza pullouts. All of them swore they would be in the Gaza Strip the day the army tried to uproot the settlers. None of them were. Now, that was done very easily. They infiltrated the leadership of the Yesha Council, and I proved it. And this is something I did, I think it was last January. I found an article where Betsy Lieberman, head of the Yesha Council, was testifying at the trial of Avigdor Lieberman.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Samus, and he was just talking about how they were able to prevent the Israeli people from going there at the Gaza when the military went in to force the people, about 10,000 settlers who had lived in Gaza at Gush Katif for some of them 20, 30 or more years, and they didn't want to leave their homes, but of course the decree had been put out, the decision had been made that they were going to turn this area over to the Palestinians so that they could use it as a base for their missiles to rain down and Israel. Now, of course, they never said that, but that's exactly what happened. And, of course, there would have been several hundred thousand of protesters, Israelis, there to block the military, and they never would have been able to force the settlers, the 10,000 settlers, to leave, except that the Israeli government infiltrated the pro-Israeli organizations. And so Barry was just telling us how he was able to verify that. But, ladies and gentlemen, you must understand that all of our conservative and all of our religious organizations in the United States have been infiltrated in a very similar manner. I can think of perhaps one or two organizations that have not been infiltrated here because they have a strong person at the head, but all the rest of them really have. I belong to many of them, and I've seen them one by one neutralized very efficiently so that they accomplish absolutely nothing. That the people belong to them, they pay their dues, they have a feeling something's happening, but nothing ever happens. Well, anyway, this is what's happened in Israel. How did they manage to neutralize this group that actually had could have brought 200,000 people down there and blocked, of course, the efforts to force the people to leave their homes?
Well, Bansi Lieberman just said it outright. He said, I was working with the police to keep the protesters away from Gaza. He, which is something I knew, and I reported on weekly, and again, I got to tell you, I was the only one reporting these gangs, but he opened his mouth, and he verified everything that I was reporting at the time, and that's why I say, get bye-bye Gaza. If you want to find out how to take over any protest, you infiltrate people.
Right.
Next. That was, by the way, protest movement number one, the Asia Council. They got rid of, 250,000 legitimate protesters who would have taken on the army. Now they became like hippies handing out red pieces of cloth, supposedly as a symbol of their outrage. They were doing stupid things because the rabbis of Judea and Samaria, especially when Shlomo Avner, were working for the Secret Services or the Shabak, and they turned the young settlers, you have to be young to really protest, to take a chance with your life, and they turned them into 1968 hippies, and they kept them away from Gush Katif, and they followed the rabbis, and they followed the leaders of Yesha into the desert for protests that meant absolutely nothing. They were 35 miles away from Gaza, and if anyone had wanted to walk to Gaza, he would have died of thirst anyways. It was in July, it was in August, actually, that the evacuation took place. They arranged it beautifully. There was no one there protesting anything. Okay, that was protest movement number one. Number two was called Zo'ad Seinu, or, well, this is our land in English. The ruler there was Moshe Feiglin. He managed to get tens of thousands of, in 1996-97, of protesters to block Israel's roads. Israel could not move. There were hours and hours of traffic jams all through the country protesting the Oslo Accord. And then one day, Moshe Feiglin woke up and seemed to have had a change of heart. He told all his activists, 10,000 of them at least, probably way more, actually. I was certainly on the streets at the time, and I was not pro-Feiglin. I just thought it was the right thing to do. But neither here nor there, he said, no more protests from us. I am going to join the Likud party and ask you to join me, and we'll take over the government the only way we know how, democratically. Now, the Likud party is thoroughly corrupt. It started out with Menachem Begin uncorrupt, but by the time Ariel Sharon, who founded the Likud party, we'll talk about that in another show, Ariel Sharon completely ruined the Israeli right, completely corrupted it, and he was supposed to. And he was working with Henry Kissinger from 1974 on. The idea was that Sharon would destroy the Israeli right by forming a party called the Likud, joining his party, Shlom Zion, with Menachem Begin's Chayrut party, and working from within to destroy the Israeli right. And this is what Moshe Feiglin asked people to join. They had dirt on him.
And of course, we see the same thing happen as the right Republican Party is being destroyed systematically here in America, intentionally, not by accident, but by intent. Well, this is Dr. Stan Berry. Go right ahead with your story.
Well, it's not a story. It is the awful truth of Israel. They got genuine patriots. They were genuine patriots. Initially, the Yesha Council was representing the communities of Judea and Samaria on their behalf, and they were actual patriots. Initially, Moshe Feigelman and Zohar Tseinu were working for patriotic Jewish beliefs, but they got them. They got these people infiltrated. They blackmailed them. And I want to tell you something. Everybody has a skeleton or two in the closet, and you bring those skeletons out. You threaten to publicly humiliate people. If that doesn't work, then you dig up something and have them arrested on some hokey charge. If that doesn't work, you kill them. And that's what's going on in this mad world of ours, where people of honor and integrity, if they don't find the dirt and they keep on showing honor and integrity, they will kill them. Nadia Matar of the Women in Green, as far as anyone knows, doesn't have a skeleton in her closet. She cannot be bought off. It looks like they're going to have to kill her. And this is what this article I wrote was all about. Oh, by the way, I'll give you my website. You can go look at the article. My website is, well, just go to BarryChamish.com. My name is BarryChamish.com. Go to articles. I think it should be up by now. The point of the issue is that if you really are a person of integrity and you actually stand up to this Council on Foreign Relations, boy, you end up like me. That's what you do, where they try and kill you. And we've gone through my little story in Israel, where I started exposing the Sharon murder, and the same people were involved. Sharon had a stroke after drinking tea with Shimon Peres in the Knesset. He was brought to hospital by Yoram Rubin. He was the bodyguard who actually pumped the bullets into Yitzhak Rabin. It was the same hit squad, and suddenly Sharon had a stroke. Suddenly I had a stroke. The stroke was followed by endless court cases where even though I'm in the hospital with a stroke, all of a sudden I'm being sued all over the place by so-called far right of Israel. That still didn't faze me. So finally one day I was invited to a party by a woman who I now understand...
We'll be back in just a moment
right.
Here. Well, anyway, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is simply telling about the problems that he had himself in Israel, and there were really efforts to kill him. He was hospitalized, and certainly was given a lot of the very, very strange drugs, and then he was eventually invited to a party. This is after he got out of the hospital and had a stroke. And what happened when they invited you to the party, Barry?
It was in a remote location. It was supposedly on somebody's farm. I got there, and wham, I got smashed, right bullseye in a rented car. They won't tell me who drove it. The police wouldn't release my file. My lawyer couldn't get the police to release my police file. My insurance company could not persuade the police to release my police file. They hid it from me. I died. I was dead and recovered on the hospital table three times. I'm very fortunate. My daughter is here from Israel at the very moment that we speak. Thank goodness she's a lovely girl. But the effect on my family of my leaving was devastating, but there was no choice. What can you say? I was dead, and I knew if I stayed there much longer, they would have got to me. Nadia Matar was arrested for nothing. The next stage is going to be bad. And I wrote an article telling her people to guard this woman. Go traveling with her. Don't let her travel alone. Do whatever is necessary. Keep up the fight, because this Council on Foreign Relations is absolutely wacko nuts. They are killing Americans and Israelis. Anyone who knows too much, anyone who is interfering with their operations, is now liable for murder. And let me tell you, their operation is to destroy. Now, look, they may not really, really intend to destroy Israel, but they will anyways. we've gone through this show. I interviewed one of the two Israeli authors of the Oslo Accord. He admitted to me and my partner Joel Bainerman that the ultimate object of Oslo was to destroy Israel's borders and to create a regional trading bloc along the lines of the EU. He admitted to both of us that Oslo was founded secretly. The public wasn't told all the clauses, but the goal of Oslo was, in fact, to destroy not only Israel's borders, but borders throughout the Middle East and create one giant trading bloc.
Yeah, that's exactly what they intend to do here in North America and South America and Africa, and that is part of the Council on Foreign Relations plan. But the Council on Foreign Relations doesn't kill people. They, of course, have the CIA. The head of the CIA always comes from there. And the CIA doesn't even necessarily kill people. They just they finance and pay other people to do it. And they've been doing it for years, and certainly they've worked with the mafia and other similar organizations throughout the world. And if you doubt that, a wonderful book called Double Cross, written by the brother of the head of the American mafia. His name was Sam Chuck Giancano, about the close liaison between the American Central Intelligence, which, of course, that had to always come to the CFR, and the American Mafia, and specifically Sam Giancano, who was, of course, killed, and it's assumed he was killed by the very people in the CIA he was working with. That's why the book is called Double Cross. Well, let's, before we go on, Barry, let's get your web page out just one more time so people will know how to get that, and then I want you to tell them how to get your books.
Well, the books go to lulu.com, but I have DVDs. One is of a speech I gave in Denver a month and a half ago. It's called Preventing the New Israeli Holocaust. I've got a DVD which I sent to you, The Vatican's New Crusade for Jerusalem. I got a very strange DVD about the aerial phenomenon over Israel, very weird phenomenon at the time of the Oslo Accords. Here's my phone number, only for orders, please. It's 904-501-7605. That's 904-501-7605. The website, BarryChalmers.com, will get you there. Lulu.com. Write my name under search, Chalmers, and you'll see all my books. Bye Bye Gaza is the most contemporary, and it's really about what we've been talking about tonight. And, you know, when I write this article, look what I call the article, Killing Me Softly with His Gun. Okay, now, who calls an article but the CFR Killing Me Softly with His Gun? Well, it's that kind of a title that gets the most unexpected people reading the actual contents. I expose the fact that if you protest the CFR, in this case Condoleezza Rice, there will be tremendous consequences on your own life. I should know about that. And I warned Nadia Matar to take tremendous caution in the near future. She has been put on their hit list, and she's got to be very, very careful.
Well, I'm sure that they will stop at nothing. Certainly, they have killed many, many people. We, as I mentioned, I've had a number of my guests have been killed. I had the opportunity of interviewing three separate CIA or assassins right here on our program. And, let's see, I guess they're all still living. But, of course, they've come under tremendous pressure for coming forward and explaining that they were actually recruited by our government to kill Americans. But this is the sort of thing that really goes on in the world today. So if you think that Barry is simply raving, he's not. Unfortunately, this is the reality. I wish it were true. But we live in a fallen world. We live in a very dangerous world, and I think it's getting more dangerous all the time. Well, what's your impression of what's going on over there in Israel today? What does your daughter tell you? Are the people prepared to go to war with Syria and Iran and Lebanon and for the consequences of another major war where there may very well be attacks on Israel for with chemical or biological weapons?
I'm going to tell you something a little odd. The Israeli people are hiding it. I get letters from people all the time who say the same thing to me, that people are going to clubs a lot, they're going to restaurants a lot. They must know that they're surrounded by tens of thousands of missiles. They must remember the war last summer, where just 4,000 over 34 days completely emptied out the north of the country. And now they've got 60,000 of them. Even Saudi Arabia's in on the act now. They must know this, but nobody is openly saying that Israel is now under a missile threat, the likes of which no country has ever seen before, and that any spark could get the Arabs into a war Israel most likely cannot possibly win. I have an article sitting here, why Israel will never use its nuclear resources to win the war, largely because its own leadership is in on the plot to destroy the country, and this is not the day we do that show. Someday we'll talk about who the actual labor Zionists are, but nonetheless, Israel is in a position where its own people don't want to face reality anymore.
Well, I think that it's really a very human reaction. In fact, I know talking to people here in the United States, nobody wants to face the implications of our being involved in a war with Iran in 30 to 60 days. I mean, people would rather think about other things, would rather think about the football season, you know, and whether our favorite team is going to do well. And they'd rather think about what certainly is happening as far as the O.J. Simpson. Now, there's a really important issue. I mean, what's going to happen when they put O.J. Simpson on trial? And you know, in fact, that whole thing, obvious to me, is very much of a scam. I believe, of course, O.J. was set up by this, and most of the blacks feel that he's not going to get a fair trial, and most of the whites feel he is, and it's just like it was during the first trial, which was one of these nights we can talk about the true story of what happened when O.J. Simpson's wife and Ron Goldman were killed. But you've never heard that. But right again, right now, when they're trying to give us something else to get us distracted, why, we've got another O.J. Simpson issue, and of course it's going to divide us along racial lines, and then of course these young men who were tried in the South, you know, as adults for beating up a white boy, but of course they were all juveniles, and that of course has given Al Sharpton a chance to go and begin talking about racism again. And so we get America all riled up on, well, what I'd say, relatively unimportant issues, as America faces the most devastating war we've been in probably half a century. So, well, go ahead, Barry.
I ask one question. Where are you getting the soldiers from? Really, who would be crazy enough at this time of your history to join the army?
There are a lot of people who are very, very patriotic. There are a lot of people, young men, who really want to prove themselves, and somehow joining the army and risking your life sort of makes you into a man. And I think when you're young and foolish and idealistic, I'm sure that Pat Tillman joined the army because he believed in America, and I'm sure many of the young men who go overseas believe that what they're doing is right. They don't understand that they're being betrayed. They're being betrayed by the very leaders who send them off to fight and bleed and suffer, but never to be allowed to win the wars. Just simply to fight, but never be allowed to win.
Well, just keep in mind, the Israeli army is not the Israeli army anymore. The left, the Jews of the kibbutzim, who were the traditional officers and leaders, they're gone. They hang around the kibbutzim taking, drugs like ecstasy. They go to raves. They are the last people in the world who would actually fight and kill. and to defend their country anymore. Israel's got a major, major problem. The only soldiers right now who truly believe in the old Zionism are the very religious soldiers being thrown out of their houses by the Israel Defense Forces. They're the only Zionists left in the country who believe in Israel, and the Israel Defense Forces is really their natural enemy today. So we have a situation where the army has a core group of religious soldiers. It's got an awful lot of left-wing soldiers who really don't have their heart in being in the army. They've got 25% of the youth no longer serving the army in any capacity whatsoever. This is not the old Israel anymore. Never forget this if you don't understand. Israel has been demoralized.
Well, of course, we have a real problem in America as well. In fact, I'm having a lieutenant general, a retired lieutenant general, who is actually at the CENTCOM headquarters during the Iraqi war. He'll be our guest next week. And he has told me, he said, we've got to get out of Iraq. We've got to get out there, you know, within a year. We are destroying the American military. We cannot maintain our military, sending these people back over there for repeated tours. And if we don't get our men out and to start rebuilding our army, we're not going to have an army. We're destroying our equipment. We're destroying our men. We're destroying the morale. This is a lieutenant general. And he knows, because he's a key man. In fact, he's written a new book on A General Speaks Out, but we're going to be interviewing him. Well, it'll be a fascinating interview, and I'm sure there are many of our military people, senior military people, who say, who feel exactly the same way. Most of them don't have the guts to speak out, but I would say we're fortunate. We've had several dozen generals speak out and say what we're doing is wrong, but you never hear them interviewed, you know, by Rush Limbaugh, by Sean Hannity, or by certainly by Brian Williams.
Well, the issue with Israel is a lot of religious groups have taken Israel and created a Disneyland out of Israel, and they believe that this is actually prophesized. Every event taking place was prophesized. I would suggest that there are a few surprises waiting to happen that weren't necessarily prophesied. This is mankind at its most evil. We've got two major enemies out to destroy Israel. They are the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States, and they are the Vatican in Europe. And these are the two enemies. Call them the EU and America to make your life simpler. But it's not that. It's something beyond. Well, the EU really is the Vatican and the Bilderberg Group, and there are forces at work that people don't realize exist. The same in America. The Council on Foreign Relations controls the State Department. Well, it can Condoleezza Rice, Dick Cheney. In fact, every Secretary of State and National Security advisor from at least the time, I would say, of Johnson. Nixon was Kissinger, and then Carter was Brzezinski, and they're all CFR.
Every Secretary of State going back to Cordell Hull has come from the Council on Foreign Relations. So we have a what's known as a bipartisan foreign policy. In other words, it doesn't matter how the American people feel. The elite have a different goal. But, you know, you mentioned, of course, the CFR. You mentioned the Vatican and certain religious forces. But, of course, the Arabs want to destroy Israel as well. And then there are other spiritual forces, and they're very, very real. We read their publications, and I really believe that they want, of course, they're the coordinating force behind so much of this. They really want to plunge the Christians and the Jews into a headlong battle with the Muslim world so we can destroy one another. And out of the chaos and disruption and ashes will come this new world order that they want. And there really are spiritual forces out there, and anybody who doubts that needs to read my February 2007 newsletter up on the web. That's RadioLiberty.com, February 2007. Read what Alice Bailey wrote, where it was channeled to her by the demonic spirit which possessed her and which wrote 19 books to her. So, anyway, of course, but I agree with you, where your nation and my nation are in real trouble.
Oh, how much time do we have left?
You've got about a minute and a half.
Oh, then I can't go into it. You brought up a very interesting point. We'll talk about some other time. I was going to go on to Madonna, the Kabbalah, Shimon Peres, the Lucifer Foundation, and all this baloney, which unfortunately is very real. The phony Kabbalah we don't have time to do. Remind me one of these days and we'll do it.
All right, fine. Well, I think this is a very important thing. I mean, here's Madonna, who certainly represents everything crass and crude and licentious in our society, professing to believe, of course, in this ancient mystical Judaism. And I mean, she's certainly giving the Kabbalah and the ancient Judaism a bad name. We're going to be back here in just a minute. One more time, your webpage there.
Just go to barrychalmers.com. Enjoy yourself. Go to the archives in my article section.
All right, fine. Hang on there. Well done, Barry. Don't you hang up just yet.
Okay.
Well, Barry, now you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Oh, then I will. Look, Madonna went to Israel for Rosh Hashanah, and she had a meeting with Shimon Peres. And she brought her Hollywood pals, Ashton Kutcher, whoever they are, it doesn't faze me, but your producer, Ari Goldberg, sent me a URL where Peres signs a petition by the Lucis Fund, L-U-C-I-S fund, on behalf of Israel. There are so many leads that point Shimon Peres into absolute satanic beliefs, and I'm not a religious person. When I use the word satanic, I mean it. I actually mean it. And that this man simply believes in evil.
And for the listener out there, the Lucis Trust actually used to be known as the Lucifer Publishing House. They changed the name because a lot of people give Lucifer, sort of a bad rap, so they want to make it sound nicer. So if Peres is tied into the Lucis Trust, you know where he's really coming from. Go right ahead, Barry.
Madonna, her behavior is not just licentious. She had a video and a book called Sex, and she's she has persuaded young women to act at age 12 the way they shouldn't act until they're at least 21, at least. She's had a horrible influence, and it's on purpose. And her meeting Shimon Peres is not an accident. No one in their right mind believes that she is helping Judaism. If people understand what this is all about, it's to bring down Judaism.
And, of course, whenever you have this licentiousness, you say these girls shouldn't act that way until they're 21. I don't think they ought to act that way at any time.
This
is basically, tends to degrade women and men, of course, when they act the way that they're doing. And of course, you hear what the Arabs are saying. Why, you're licentious. You mean you're certainly immoral. And I hate to say it, but they're really right. We've got to get back to some sort of moral standards there. God will never again bless Israel. He will never again bless our country. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've had Barry Shamish with us for an hour this evening. Always a pleasure. And
always
Barry, we'll
here.
Be talking to you again next week. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Good night, Dr. Shamish.
Good night, and God bless.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that you enjoy Barry Shamish. I find Barry fascinating. We get him on all of our programs every week. A fascinating source of information. A man who feels very strongly about what's happening to his country. Well, of course, I feel that he's right, that there is a plan to destroy Israel. But I believe that behind that are powerful satanic forces. And, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which takes you into that. My talk on the Forbidden Secrets, which is available on DVD, and of course is also available with a syllabus, which we hope people will want to get. And certainly we carry the new four-tape set, and it's four-tape or four-CD, called Satanic Crimes. We have a book on satanic crimes. This is not imaginary, it's real. If you have any question that there is another dimension and another reality, we suggest a book called Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, and you can get that by itself or in combination with a four-CD or four-tape set called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, because Malachi Martin wrote the book Hostage to the Devil. And you must understand that there is another dimension. We have a book on The Diary of a Devil Hunter. We have a book called Programmed to Kill. We, of course, try to make you understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle, and there are spiritual forces at work. If you've not yet read my pamphlet on, and that's actually three pamphlets from our newsletters, The Occult Hierarchy. The Occult Hierarchy. We've recommended to you some of the things I've written, a few of the things that Dr. Dennis Cuddy, our good friend, has written. Will give you tremendous insight into the fact that there is another dimension. Certainly, if you have not yet seen our four-tape or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. It will take you into, of course, the DVD and the book that are put out by Rhonda Burns, introducing people to the other dimension and teaching you how you can manipulate the entire universe with your mind. And they will tell you that if you focus your attention on certain things, that, of course, you can have whatever you want. If you learn how to utilize your ability to manipulate the world. And the trouble is that this is the secret that has been passed down by the mystery religions through the ages, and I want to tell you, without any reservation, you need to know about it, but never, never, never try to utilize this, because it may work, and you may get some of the things you want, but you'll pay for it with your eternal soul. And what you're doing is really contacting the beings from another dimension. And certainly I have emails from witches who've lambasted me for things I've said on television or on radios and saying, look, you don't understand, we're good witches, we're white witches, we just have our spells and cast our spells and whip off our witches' brews because we want to contact the beings from the other dimension. Alice Bailey, of course, was the leader of the Theosophical movement during the first half of the last century. And, of course, her books, 19 of them, were channeled to her by a being from the other dimension named Shaw Cool. And, of course, you need to understand that there truly are people who are in contact with the beings from the other dimension. Barbara Marx Hubbard's book, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, financed under the auspices of the Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment for the Humanities. Barbara Marx Hubbard's book was channeled to her by a spirit she called the Christ Spirit. And you really, of course, need to read our treatise on, of course, her writings. And, of course, where she writes about and rewrites the Book of Revelation to tell you its true meaning and how they're going to have to kill a quarter of the world's population. But as he says in the original manuscript, but that is not your job, my dear. That is ours, because we are the writers of the pale horse, death. If you'd like to address those pages, we have them available. We want to remind you about our all-day meeting on the 28th of October. Hope many of you can make it there. Going to be an exciting time. Going to bring in speakers. We'll have times for questions and answers. And I think you'll have a great time. And after reservation, we're serving lunch. Pray for America. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.